dinlediğiniz Digital Marketer.
Welcome to the Digital Marketer Podcast. This is the producer, Darren Clark, and today we have a special episode lined up for you. Because it's the holidays, I've put together a compilation of some of the highlights and most valuable takeaways from our most popular episodes. So let's jump right in with a section from episode 24 with the Digital Marketer partners Ryan Dice and Richard Lindner talking about their process for strategic planning.
Really excited to have Richard Lindner, Ryan Dice in the Batcave. Well, let's talk about planning, the strategic kind.
Yeah. I know for us, it's around this time of the year and we really start thinking about what's going to happen next year. And I'm sure for lots of folks, whatever did happen, good, bad, or otherwise, over the, you know, previous 11, 12 months, you know, now's kind of the time when people start getting a little introspective. And obviously, however great, maybe this year you're looking back, you're going like, great year. Maybe you're looking back going, oh my God, that was terrible. But whatever it is, you probably want next year to be better than this year, right? So if that's kind of where you're thinking, then hopefully we can deliver some ideas, at least pull back the curtains a little bit on how we handle things here at Digital Marketer.
What are some of the questions that you ask yourself while you're planning?
So we generally tend to follow a five-step process that we go through here. I know the first step, and this is the most painful and cathartic, is really to just do business with the past, right? And to be just brutal about it, to sit down and to take an opportunity. I know at the executive level, Richard sends a thing out to all of us. I mean, it goes, you know, me as well. And it's, okay, what things do we feel like really went right this year? What things do we wish we had another shot at? Do we wish we could do all over again? And that's great. There's some really good learnings that come from that. But it's also just, it's nearly impossible to move forward. They talk about this just even in therapy, right? It's really impossible to move forward if you don't do business with the past.
Yeah.
So good year or bad year, it really doesn't matter. You're always going to have things that worked and things that didn't. So that's always step one. So asking yourself, what worked? What didn't work? And then really doing business with that, right? Making sure that you acknowledge it. And some of those learnings you're going to bring into the planning process, some of them you just need to acknowledge and say, this happened. It sucked. Let's never do it again. You know, we're going to talk about it right now. We're going to hug and then we're going to move on, right? We just got to get past it.
And you're right. You can carry both successes and failures with you into the future. And you want to make sure you carry what you've learned from success and from failure, but you don't want to carry arrogance into a new goal. If you're setting a new goal, if you're really breaking down, you know, that next phase of growth and you had success with it last year, you need to also do business with the fact that we won. This is a new game.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. If you won last week, you know, if you're in sports, right, you're playing the sports ball and you won last week and it's a new game. If you show up, you're like, we did it. We won.
Yeah.
And the game hasn't started. You're probably going to lose. And it's your arrogance and just your mindset. So it's not just the things that didn't go well that you have to do business with. Like sometimes you hug, sometimes you high five. But at the end of the day, once you've done business with the past, you reset the scoreboard to zero.
Yeah, you turn the page. So step one, doing business with the past. Step two, now you want to set your goal. This is going to seem like very presumptuous in part because it is, right? I'm going to set a goal. You know, based on what? Just based on the discussions about what happened last year? Yeah.
Kinda.
You're going to set a goal and you're going to know right now. I mean, it's step two of a five-step process. So you're going to set a goal and you got to know that this is likely going to change just through this process. But so much of the planning process is making assumptions and then testing those assumptions. It's the scientific method, right? We're going to make a hypothesis and we're going to test it. A lot of people, they're afraid to plan because they don't want to be wrong. Right. Well, if I make a plan and it doesn't work out, it turns out I was wrong. If you approach it scientifically, like scientists want to be wrong. They know, ask any sincere scientist. They don't ever prove anything to be true. They only prove things to be false. And that's where the learnings occur. So we're going to set a goal and we're going to decide, okay, and usually it's going to be informed by what went right or what didn't go right, you know, the previous year. But then you're going to set a goal. Now, what we're going to say is this needs to be a growth goal because we're talking about growth planning right now. And so that's going to come in one of three categories, either a unit goal, a revenue goal, or you might have a subscription, like an MRR goal, right? So we just want to add this many number of customers. We want to add this many members. We want to have this many people come to our event, right? That's a unit goal. A subscription goal is we want to add this much in MRR or ARR, right? We want to increase subscription revenue. And then you could just have a top line revenue goal. We want to make this much money. You want to set that goal and then decide, okay, what percentage do we want this to grow? And we're going to say what percentage, because oftentimes when you're setting this goal, you don't even know what the number is today. That's when you get into step three. Okay, so step one, we did business with the past. Step two, we're going to set a growth goal. We're going to decide the category. We're going to decide what percentage we want it to grow. And then step three, we're going to ask, like, where do we stand today? And really, you need to benchmark that. I don't know, Rich, you want to speak to kind of any of the processes around that?
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, setting the goal is a lot like throwing a dart. It's a lot of saying, like, what needs to be true, whether that's based on your mission or kind of the vision of the company you want or where you need to be for some other, you know, random or arbitrary goal. You kind of have to throw a dart and say, we think we need this many members or this many new customers or this many subscribers. And then you absolutely start taking that goal, that wish, and starting to validate it. The next step is benchmarking. Where is it now? Where do we stand today as it relates to this goal? If it's a member goal, and you say, I want this many members, how many members do you have today, right? And how are you getting them? What are the processes you have in place to get them? And kind of where are they coming from? So whatever the unit goal or the revenue goal or the MRR, basically, what is it today? And how do we achieve it currently?
Yeah, so you're not just benchmarking the numbers, you're also benchmarking your processes, right? Because that's going to unlock some opportunities. So that's kind of the next question we ask. Then we go into really step four, which is how do we close this gap? Right. So, you know, invariably, you set a percentage goal. We want to grow by this much. How do we go about closing that gap? And that's when you're really going to dive in and, you know, just ask yourself, like, can it be done? Is this even possible? Look at our benchmark. Like, can this be done? And that's kind of the rubber meets the road. And it's in this stage where we're really going to be looking into the opportunities, right? What opportunities for growth do we see? What are some of the under-monetized channels, for example? Like, so, oh my gosh, we're adding tons of members in Facebook, but look, Google's awful, and oh, there's almost nothing coming through follow-up efforts. I think this was fairly recently. Like, we were looking at where lab members were coming from, and very little was coming in through organic. Like, this is crazy. There's so much untapped potential here, right? So let's go ahead and do that. So that's step four, is how are we going to close the gap? And that is where you decide at the end, can this happen? Like, can we do this? And, you know, yeah, I believe we can, or now we can't. And if you can't, if you decide, like, no, then you go back to step two.
And real quick, I've got kind of a rule that, and I say I don't really know where the rule came from, but I think that at some point you have to just have binary ways to make decisions. So I think I created it. Maybe you created it. Maybe we read it.
If it sounds smart, I'll take credit for it.
All right, I'm going to say something that doesn't sound smart. You can have, I'll take
just
that.
Just kidding, loser. That wasn't it.
I'm going to sandbag it.
Here's the real one.
Dibs. I'm pre-calling dibs. So our goals have to be uncomfortably achievable. And the way that we define uncomfortably achievable is that we can actually get to 65% of the goal without adding any additional resources. So resources being kind of defined as money, time, people, strategy. Because if you can't get to 65% just with known, do we have the strategy to do it? Yeah. Would we have to reprioritize some people or some not? Doesn't mean that you can continue to do everything that you're doing or spend your money in the way that you're spending it or spend your time in the way you're spending it. But if you have to go out and say, well, in order to do this, we'd have to raise an additional $2 million, hire 9 people, and come up with 2 or 3 additional strategies.
Yeah.
You know what? That's not uncomfortably achievable. We're back into wish, dream, and la la land, right?
Unless
you're a funded company and you've kind of got that money, you've got your VC partners, you've got your investment partners, and there's a process for going and getting that. But then that's an asset, that's a known thing.
Yeah.
So I would say we can do that without adding those. We just go back to the bank, we go back to our partners. So going in and saying, you know, while we're analyzing this, can we get to 65% of this goal? Like on paper. On paper, can we get to 65%? Because if not, it's not uncomfortably achievable. It's unreasonable that you would achieve it.
Yeah. And I think that is a good thing. So then that's that gut check. So if you're looking at it, you're like, no, I don't know if we can. Or, you know, we can, but we need these other things to go right. I don't really see a plan on paper that gets us to 65%. Then you got to go back and you got to reevaluate. Then the fifth and final step is to establish what are the metrics and KPIs that we really need to measure, especially the lead measures. What are the things that are going to be indicators that we're on track, right? Because if you've got a growth goal, if you have a revenue target, for example, let's say you want to grow subscription revenue by 25%. If you wait for those numbers to come in, you're not really going to know. So you've got to look maybe back into, you know, we need to track trials or we need to track new leads or subscribers or traffic, right? So those are the leading indicators and the KPIs that you believe will get you there. Maybe you're tracking churn, right? Churn month over month. So figuring out what are those lead measures, that's the last step. And then yeah, we literally put it into a single page document. Here's the goal. Here are the things that we're going to need to accomplish to kind of close that gap, right? These are going to be the key initiatives, the major projects that we're going to be going through. And these are the KPIs that we're going to be tracking. And then each team takes that and says, okay, in light of this now, what do we need to do to make sure that we're doing our part to hit that goal? What metrics do we need to be tracked? And that's how you literally get an entire team on the same page. That's the five-step planning process.
Next up, let's have a listen to Digital Marketer's Head of Partnerships, Marcus Murphy, talking with Jarek Glant, VP of Sales at Cardone Enterprises.
I want to talk about sales.
Okay, permission granted.
But you're a different animal. And I think that that's the reason why all of our listeners who are marketers, who are absolutely scared right now, by the way, of being around salespeople, tell them why it's okay to be identify as a salesperson now.
Well, I think that as a business person, like, you need to understand that you can never rely on one thing. And like, I think marketers get, you know, they get creative and they start finding new tools and new ways to do things, but they tend to get more and more complicated.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just as easy as making a phone call and talking to somebody.
No, man, nobody's calling anybody anymore.
And so like things that we do, like we have the ability, because we have people, we have staff, we have sales and support people, is, you know, like we'll do an abandoned cart campaign. And then based on the ticket value, we'll assign that phone call to a rep to make a call.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we can bucket our email list into, you know, abandoned cart, click-throughs, opens, and actually go through and make secondary passes on.
What a compliment, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that people don't think about it this way. One, I hear a lot of people say the phone is dead, right? Cold calling is dead.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, they haven't taken your training, which is probably the reason why they're saying that.
Well, you know, it's a confront issue. You know, I think that people try to find the path of least resistance. And, you know, is, you know, the age old debate of sales versus marketing. You know, say, you know, marketing is, hey, I want to bring them into me, and sales is like, I'm going to go kick on some doors. And so it's a very, very different switch. But if you have the ability to do both, then I think that's where you really increase the value, like not just your personal value, but the value of your company, your the ability to maximize sales. I mean, there's no company that's major and massive, thousands of employees, that doesn't have a sales team. Like,
right.
You know, they have big marketing teams, they have big sales teams. So, you know, I think a lot of people are missing the boat when adding just one salesperson and compensating them the right way and incentivizing that. I mean, you know, you don't have to be an outgoing salesperson to hire a sales team.
Exactly.
You know, and if you put the right processes for training in place, like that's our core product at Cardone University, we train people how to sell.
Exactly.
And if you put the right training processes in place, you don't need to be an expert. Like, I don't need to be an ad expert on Facebook. I can hire a guy that can do that. I can understand the strategy and what goes into it, but I'm not building ads, you know?
Right.
So I think that you know, sales is, you can't get away from it.
So check out episode 41 for the rest of that great conversation. All right, next up, we're going to hear some tips from Digital Marketer's SEO expert, Amanda Powell.
So I'm really excited to talk with Amanda. We're going to be talking about skyscraper content. And yeah, let's just bring on Amanda and we'll have a little chat.
Hey.
Let's talk a little bit about how this all started and, you know, looking at determining the competition, because basically we had a post that was kind of being usurped. Could you talk a little bit about that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So the skyscraper strategy has been around for a while in the SEO world, and it's called different things. It is very similar to what Russ calls building out a pillar post, but using the skyscraper strategy, it's more focused around building upon your competition, not stealing your competition's content, but building it in a way that you think will resonate even better for your customer base and your clientele.
Kind of using what they have and then staking your claim really close to it and higher.
Exactly. But the idea is that you build it better than your competition and in a way that's going to resonate with your customers. Hence the term skyscraper. So you're building your content on top of their content, creating a larger piece of content.
Mm-hmm.
But the post that you're talking about is actually our best email subject lines written by John Grimshaw, who was previously our data analyst here at Digital Marketer. And this piece of content has done so well. It was actually getting more traffic than our homepage. It was getting more traffic than our homepage, which is insane. I was fine with it because it's getting a lot of organic traffic and it has a lot of really relevant keywords to the digital marketing industry. It's a great piece of content. But what we started to see is that we were starting to slip in the search results. We're still on page one, which is great, but we were consistently ranked number one for best email subject lines, which is the title of the post. And what we started to see is that we're no longer consistently number one. And it was because HubSpot actually was starting to build skyscraper content. Mm-hmm. So at first they built best email subject lines, which ranked on top of us because it was a newer version of the post, right? So we usually update our best email subject lines at the end of the year. I know that Matt Sheeler, who's our promotions manager, usually goes through and looks at the best performing email subject lines, and that's how we update the post every year. So ours isn't updated till December. So they built theirs out, I think, in July. But then not only that, so that would just be building upon our content, but then they also built out best sales email subject lines.
So they niched down a little bit.
Exactly. So they were doing, I mean, they were essentially doing the skyscraper strategy, and it was, I mean, totally it is working. It's working really well. Mm-hmm. And HubSpot is not only a partner, but also a competitor in the search results, but it's also kind of good because you can see how they're using these search strategies that we are also using. Mm-hmm. So it becomes kind of like a friendly competition.
Yeah, frenemies.
Yeah, frenemies is the perfect word to use.
We share avatars, but we don't, you know, there's enough people to go around. We share avatars, but we're not stealing customers away from each other necessarily. It's just particularly in these search results, in rankings is where we're seeing the competition. So that's kind of why they're our frenemy, but also, you know, they're an awesome partner and like a friend to us as well.
Yeah, exactly. And you had mentioned the Moz Beginner's Guide to SEO, which is also another really good example because we built the Ultimate Guide to Digital Marketing, which you had also mentioned Moz's Beginner's Guide to SEO. And we had built out the Ultimate Guide to Digital Marketing. Lindsay Martyr and Russ Henneberry had built that out. And it was based off of Moz has a beginner's guide, but so many other companies also have these ultimate guides to marketing, ultimate guides to data
shaving
analytics.
Your legs.
Yeah, shaving your legs. Ultimate guides to everything, beginner's guides to everything. But what we did differently is that we built it out so it included every aspect of marketing. And they built it out in a beautiful way that includes every aspect of marketing has a different chapter within the guide. And what we also did differently was that we gave it to customers, gave it to anyone for free, which most companies aren't doing. It's usually some form of a lead magnet and you have to provide an email. We don't even make you provide an email. You just, you're able to
see it
in the search results, which is a really extremely valuable. I read that guide over and over, but that was kind of the idea, right? So a lot of companies build out these guides, but we tried to do it in a different way that would be more valuable to our customers.
100xing everything else that existed.
Back, full circle.
Full circle. So when you kind of took over, which there's no technical taking over because you're our first ever SEO manager. So when you came in and you started to look at some of the things, you saw us kind of slipping down. There's some things that you were able to see maybe we weren't doing or keywords we weren't going after. So do you want to dig into some of that?
Yeah. And I think it was really nice to come in to Digital Marketer because we have so many different variations of content. I don't even know if variations is the right word. Just so many quality pieces of content.
And ways to consume it, too.
Exactly. And ways to consume it that I knew it was going to be a pretty easy way to go. They just needed to be optimized correctly, which Russ had done a really good job. But basically, SEO is all about constant updates, not only with the Google algorithms that occur every month, every week, now it seems like, but you're getting these updates in Google and you also need to start updating your content. Like if we go back to the best email subject lines, right, we update that every year. But then when someone updates it 6 months in, they're going to start ranking above us. So it's just this constant update. And it was a matter of finding what subject areas do we need to update in each of these pieces of content? The Ultimate Guide to Digital Marketing, for example, you made the joke, I think, a few weeks ago, Maddie D, who's our managing editor, when we worked on updating the Ultimate Guide, which we recently updated the first chapter, you had made the joke that, oh, you're going to perpetually updating that because every month you're going to have to update a new chapter.
Yeah.
And then by the time you get to the last chapter, you're going to have
to update the first chapter again.
Yeah. So I think that's
that was a fact. That wasn't a joke.
It is a fact.
We just all laughed and it was like a laugh, a fear.
That's exactly the strategy in a nutshell, mm-hmm. is just this constant update, constantly finding your competitors in the search results, constantly finding your competitors within email promotions, and then figuring out what they're targeting that you might not be targeting and how that content that you haven't built yet or that maybe you have built and you need to update needs to provide a greater value to your customers.
So take us into the technical side. So obviously, you know, people listening, if they do content, they know, okay, I just write better or I write longer or I write more. So how on the SEO side would you go in and make these updates and changes?
Yeah. So what this post kind of talks about is how you can use a tool that I use all the time called SEMrush to kind of dig in further than just like make your content longer, digging in further than just the content, but how to structure it, what to focus on. And I use SEMrush for this. And there's lots of other SEO tools that you can use. I've used lots of other tools such as BrightEdge and SpyFu, and they're all really great tools. BrightEdge is more of like an enterprise level tool. SpyFu is really great at finding competitor keywords, which is also really great for the skyscraper strategy. Mm-hmm. Here at DM, we use SEMrush, which I think is a nice combination of all of those tools. You're able to see competitor analysis. I think they recently actually even added some backlink analysis in there. I track our rankings within SEMrush. So this post kind of goes through a flow of how I use SEMrush to kind of build out the skyscraper content.
Okay.
Basically, when you go into the tool, the easiest piece of the tool to use, which I use all the time, is just called the domain analytics in the left sidebar. So when you click on that, you can type in any URL, which is actually really fun. Sometimes it's fun to just go in and type in like retail shops to be like, how is their SEO doing?
What are they? Yeah, you can kind of look at like, what is your secret? What are you trying to do?
Exactly. And also sometimes it's a good confidence booster if you're like, oh, they definitely got hit by this update and we were prepared for that. Or it's kind of a driving factor to be like, oh, they've recently increased their organic traffic clearly through their rankings. So I need to do, what can I do better? So you can type in any URL. I usually do it without a www in the front because that way you'll be able to pull subdomains such as like blog.digitalmarketer, which we use a folder. So we have the blog at the end of our digital marketer URL, but a lot of blogs use that subdomain. So it's important to include that because blogs are...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so blogs are an important part of your content strategy.
I feel like that's obviously a secret hot tip. I wouldn't have thought of that. I would just be like looking at all the like their actual websites. I wouldn't be looking at any sub... Are they called sub?
Yeah, subdomains. Yeah, subdomains. You're right.
I wouldn't be looking at any of their subdomains.
Yeah, it's important to kind of remember that. It's one of those like simple things that sometimes you don't always think of. Sometimes I'll still type in www and be like, oh, our lab at Digital Marketer is included on a subdomain. And it's important, for example, if I'm not looking at lab.digitalmarketer.com, I could miss some kind of technical error that's going on in lab that might not be happening with the Digital Marketer site. So it's always important to kind of look at both.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But when you input that URL into any URL into domain analytics, you're going to pop up with a competitor analysis within SEMrush. And sometimes those competitors are super relevant. And sometimes you're like, where did they get this
from?
Interesting. But basically what SEMrush does is it pulls sites that have the greatest number of matching key terms to your website. And sometimes they might have a really great number of matching key terms that are not relevant whatsoever. Huh. We rank for the term chatbook because we've written a post about chatbooks, the company chatbooks. So we rank for that key term, and another company might have also written a blog post about it, but it's not relevant to our industry. So it's a matter of clicking through these competitors. And once you've done that, also going in and manually checking in Google search results to see, are these key terms relevant to my actual industry. You don't want to be building content around keywords that aren't relevant. And within domain analytics, within SEMrush, you can kind of see all of this. So you can click on individual competitors within SEMrush and then look at a keyword gap, essentially. And it shows you all the keywords that are matching your website and your competitor's website and what key terms are matching up. And also what key terms they're ranking for that you might not be ranking for. And that's kind of how you can determine the gap, because through those keywords, you're able to see, oh, they're ranking for the super relevant key term that I hadn't thought of. And maybe I should start thinking of that.
So that's our Director of Marketing, Amanda Powell, on episode 25. And you can also hear more from her on episode 51. On episode 61, digital marketer's social media expert Shannon Goodell gave us a behind-the-scenes look at how she approaches building an audience on Instagram.
So I'm really excited to talk to you about, one, how much you've changed DM Social just from the start. You recently did an office hours on it. Last year when you came in, we had about 15,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah, that was about May 2018.
And then within that time, you've increased it. Now we're like...
we're at like 90,000.
Wow.
90,200.
That's awesome. So how do you now approach social through like kind of your marketing lens for DM?
Yeah, for DM. So the great thing about DM is when I came in, we already had so much great, valuable content. I mean, our blog is like something that
should
most
be sold.
People gated, yeah, or most people have gated or is sold. It's just like step by step how to implement actual tactics and strategies. So that already gave me a leg up. But I noticed like our audience craves this type of value. We're appealing to entrepreneurs, small business owners, agencies, kind of a very broad audience, but people who want to grow their businesses. And looking at our content and how great it was and strategic for that particular audience, like, why aren't we like really honing in on this on social? That makes sense. Like, why aren't we really putting this content out there, but also giving people like snippets of info, of tips? So my thought was, let's take our content and kind of give it to people in digestible chunks in various forms. Some people like to read things. Some people like to watch things. Some people like to listen. So why not use our content and appeal and relate to the audience in the best way that they learn? So that was kind of my thought process. So we like break up our content into these chunks that people can then either dive in for more information, or they can just take that with them for their businesses. And our focus is kind of depending on the channel. Facebook, we're really video heavy. We found that that really engages our audience on Facebook the best. And so we've tried various kind of series that we have on Facebook.
Yeah.
We have our AMAs, that's Ask Me Anything. And so we have experts come in for workshops, for podcasts, and we have experts in-house. And it's like, ask them a series of questions and you film it all at once. So you get literally like 10 to 12 videos in like a 30 to 45 minute stretch.
Yeah.
And we found that these are valuable to our audience. It could be something inspirational, a story about a setback that Ryan Dice had and learned from. And that's very valuable to someone just starting their business, or maybe they're at a crossroads in their business where things aren't going well, or they just had a setback. Maybe they need to hear that that day. So it's like, that's kind of our AMA series. And we also have tip videos that we do, and those are usually from our blog posts. And it's a way, some people prefer to watch than to read. So it's a way to get that content to them and the way that they learn the best from it. And then we just do a variety of things. We take snippets from like TNC, Traffic Conversion Summit, or our workshops, or even office hours. We take those snippets and give people a chunk. And then you can even direct them. Some people want to know more, like, hey, this is where this came from type of thing. So you can use it to drive traffic even. But definitely very video heavy on Facebook. Found that that has worked. And we have a great video team here. So it's made it really kind of my job easy. But it's always testing, like, what's working, what isn't, maybe changing things up. We're trying to launch a series of like whiteboard workshops on Facebook. They'll go on Facebook and YouTube and LinkedIn too, but it's like basically having an expert draw on a whiteboard, mm-hmm. but kind of like in a mini chunk of information. So we're trying to get that off the ground. So I think that's going to be like really great for our audience and successful for us as well. Yes, that's kind of the approach on Facebook is really video heavy.
Yeah.
But it all depends on your brand and audience, mm-hmm. what they find valuable.
So what do you see most brands getting wrong on Instagram?
Oh, on Instagram. Yeah. So Instagram.
Or on Facebook. Anywhere.
Anywhere.
On social.
Yeah, on social. I think it's they're creating content about themselves to sell their products or services. Like, we're the best at lawn care or whatever. Right. You're trying to discover an audience on Instagram or Facebook or whatever channel. Do that. No one is looking for you. No one cares that you say you're the best at something or that you have this product. They don't even know they need the product. So our approach has been to focus on our target audience, what's valuable to them, and what inspires them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we base content around. Mm-hmm. And we occasionally sell. I mean, I have done stories before that direct to sales. So that's okay to do. But if that's all you're doing, it really puts people off.
Yeah. So, for example, if you had a promotion for a 2-for-1 fish fry, what would you do instead of that?
Yeah, I do anything from like recipes to fun facts to tips about cooking fish. I mean, that sounds silly, but that's what people love.
You know what's great? Have you seen? Okay, so for those of you that don't know, and around our office, there is a little Tex-Mex place called Serrano's.
Oh, yeah.
And their Instagram is actually really great. I've seen some of their ads. And have you seen their ads? They have like one where it shows them plating the food.
That's awesome.
And like, it was just like, man, you are a small like family business, but you're rocking it. It makes me want to go to Serrano's more often. Exactly.
And that's a great point. Yeah. If you have a restaurant, show kind of the behind the scenes or show the plating or show how you make a margarita.
Yeah.
Give your secrets away. It just makes people trust you and you can build that loyal fan base instead of just being, hey, look at me, another sale.
Yeah.
Like, go to, you know, buy this. Create value for your audience and the sales will come.
And finally, we've got an excerpt from episode 63 with Becky Zieber, who runs the entire Digital Marketer blog. And in this episode, she breaks down her approach to creating content for the Digital Marketer brand.
Becky, hey.
Hi.
What's up?
Nothing much.
Welcome to the podcast room.
Thanks.
How are you feeling?
Feeling good. Yeah, good. I'm excited about this.
Good. So I wanted to bring you in here because, you know, Digital Marketer is known for its incredibly high standards of free blog content.
Well, that's good to hear.
And I wanted everyone to know, a lot of people who are listening right now, who are business owners, entrepreneurs, may want a content strategy that kicks ass, but their thoughts are, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to kind of talk about is how one single person, you're hearing this here first, one single person named Becky Zieber manages the entire blog pipeline at Digital Marketer.
Yeah. Yep.
Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, ever since about January.
Okay. And that's just what we're going to talk about today because it's possible. Is it possible, true or false?
I mean, it's currently happening.
It's happening.
So I would say it's definitely possible. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's easy. And you have to have a lot of outside resources outside of yourself, but it's definitely doable and it's doable at a high quality.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start from what makes a good piece of content. What are you looking for when you're creating content? How do you plan what goes into the blog pipeline?
So we have a couple different types of posts, kind of two main calibers of posts on the DM blog. We have what we like to call casual content, which is a little more friendly, a little more, I wouldn't say entry level, but it's more broad in its kind of content. But on the other hand, we also have our in-depth content, which is actually what we had significantly more of up until I started running the blog, which is stuff that honestly we could charge for. Like it is very in depth to the same level as a lot of our products are in like steps to take and what you do to kind of implement these strategies. Mm-hmm. But we kind of pick and choose both based on what we have and what we need. So a couple times a month, we'll do an in-depth post, but we like to sprinkle in some of those casual posts because we have recently brought in a lot more people who are new to our brand.
Yeah.
When you have somebody who's new to your brand, the baseline that you are looking for is to build trust.
Right.
And you do that by saying, hey, I know a little bit about this. Our writers know a little bit about this. Let me teach you mm-hmm. for free. And they learn that and they say, okay, well, now I know that. Now I want to learn more. So then they go to the in-depth posts and then they go to your product. So we like to keep it a good balance of those. If I can get one each a week, I like that. If I can't, that's fine.
What is our current output?
We output 2 to 3 blog posts a week.
How many words?
Between 1,000 and 2,500 usually.
So these are pretty big honkers.
Yeah.
These are honkers.
Oh,
is
yeah.
what they are.
Yeah.
That is a content marketing term for a long blog
it's
post.
Official.
It's official. So these are really long posts. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the higher level strategy that we're implementing because it's changed a little bit. If you've been following Digital Marketer for a while, you know that our strategy was giving away that very amazing content. There was a focus on SEO and on searchability, but we weren't really attacking SEO specifically. How could I word that?
Yeah. Well, a lot of it was that we were coming at SEO after the post had been written and trying to put it in there after the fact.
And that changed. We obviously hired Amanda, our SEO manager, to acquisitions manager, now director of marketing. So we have an SEO. We have a search engine.
Yeah. Optimizer.
Optimizer. Yeah. We have a search engine optimizer who's now leading the marketing of Digital Marketer. So obviously it's going to be very SEO friendly. Could you tell us a little bit about how that strategy works?
Yeah. So Amanda and I, when I first got hold of the blog as my own, we sat down and we're talking about how we can start with SEO in mind instead of putting it in after the fact. Because part of the issue that you run into with SEO and that strategy of putting it in afterwards is that you're then writing for the bots. You're not writing for the people who are reading it. Mm-hmm. If you start with SEO in mind, you have your target keyword before you actually ever put words on a page. Mm-hmm. Then you're writing for the person and integrating those keywords so that the bots will like it. It just creates a more cohesive piece, which then ranks. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that. I mean, we're ranking for, I think, double the keywords that we were ranking for a year ago. Mm-hmm. No, double since January.
Double since January. And that's when you owned the blog.
It's very, I mean, there's a lot of work. SEO is a long game. So there was a lot of work done before I ever got there.
Right.
That this is, we're now reaping the benefits for. But it's also, this strategy is helping a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're starting with the SEO keywords in mind, we can then frame content that fits like keywords that we're not ranking for or keywords that we want to push higher in the rankings. And we can really catch those organic traffic viewers from the beginning, from the point where we're starting our content creation. We have those people in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it just creates a process that flows so much easier than trying to scramble at the last minute and get something up there.
Yeah.
It also means that we can then correlate our content creation with our promotion calendar, which is something else that's been really critical in our content strategy lately, is that we don't want our promo calendar and our editorial calendar to run completely separate. That completely negates the point that we're going towards.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sit down and I plan out our ed calendar, at this point, we're a couple weeks out. So I plan like for most of the month and then that's kind of how we roll. I am looking at the promotions calendar and working with our promotions manager and categorizing what posts align with those products that we're going to promote and how I can create content that helps almost prime our customers or prime new customers to be more receptive to that promotion.
Right. Yeah. Since doing that, have you found any new segments that we were missing before or ignoring before, or pieces of content that did extremely well that you thought, oh, this is kind of dumb? Is there anything you've thought, this is kind of dumb, why are we doing this? Or did you?
I mean, it's more
that, risky.
I feel like we've found that a lot of our previous content, because it was more strict with its strategic, like with its planning in the ad calendar.
Yeah.
Because there was less of a like forward thinking with keywords, it was all along similar lines. Mm-hmm. We also had the same people writing content for us. And so they had their areas of expertise that they would go through, and they excelled at that. And now I think we are at a place where I can reach out to new writers and to new contributors and kind of touch things that we haven't touched in the content creation before. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to write some stuff that's more business general.
Mm-hmm.
We had an emojis post that went out, I think, a month or two ago.
I remember that.
And people loved it. Mm-hmm. I could not explain that to you. I would say that most people know what most emojis are, but we found that people loved our emojis posts on social. So why would we not then fill that gap in our content?
So now you are not only aligning your content with our SEO strategy. So tell me if this sounds right. So we have the top down, we have our keyword strategy, things mm-hmm. that we're ranking for, in addition to, you know, whatever promotion, those are kind of aligned along with like our acquisition
yeah.
strategy. Everything there is like top level.
Yeah.
And then when you move down, you have your content being the blog, because there's different kinds of content.
Yeah.
So you have your blog strategy, and then the social strategy connects to the blog strategy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the promo calendar. So you have, you know, everything's kind of feeding from one another.
Yeah. It's this nice little web that, since, I mean, we all sit very close to each other, so that helps, but we also talk a lot about what's going on. If things are changing in one aspect, we definitely let each other know mm-hmm. so that we can then adapt the calendar. Having our editorial calendar be so flexible recently, I think, has been integral with this strategy.
Hmm.
It also means that then I'm helping edit and upload post day of,
yeah,
which can be tough, especially if you're the only one running your content, but it helps with our strategy.
What do you think got you to the point of being flexible? Is it a backlog?
Honestly, I think it was that when I first started, we had no backlog.
Mm-hmm.
We had nothing. And so I was working on a day-to-day basis anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it didn't matter if I was working on the post that I had thought I was going to be working on or if I was working on a different one. Mm-hmm. So either way, I was going to be doing the same thing day in and day out. And so I also just really think this is something that we haven't done with our content strategy here. And I really want to see if it works. And it seems to be working.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's much more holistic.
Yeah. Well, and I think if part of your idea of creating a blog and creating this kind of free content is to build trust with your readers, you need to be able to give them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But you also need to be able to give them what you think they should want.
Okay. Yeah.
So if we're going to be sending out a promotion, we want to get them ready for it. Whether or not they're the same people who are then going to go buy, that's almost negligible. Because yeah. then that sets them up for the next time we put that item on sale. They've read that content. They're primed for that sale.
Hmm. Yeah, they understand maybe why it's important or why it's...
Absolutely.
Yeah. So obviously we sell information products.
Yeah.
What strategies have you seen for other types of industries like e-commerce? What are your inspirations across other brands for content marketing?
So I actually have like a super content crush on Bon Appetit magazine and their content strategy. It's so good. And I think they're in a sort of similar place where their product is their magazine. Mm-hmm. They're selling recipes and articles and things like that. And that's exactly what they're putting on their blog mm-hmm. and what they're putting in their videos on YouTube and in their social media. It's all the same stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But I think because they draw you in with that just high quality content that they're giving away for absolutely free,
mm-hmm.
they keep you coming back.
Yeah.
Right. You fall in love with the characters, you fall in love with the writers, you fall in love with the recipes,
mm-hmm.
and then you go out and you spend $5 a year on their magazine because that's not very expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
And you just made the most amazing strawberry. What did I make? The cherry
tart.
Biscuit cobbler.
Yeah, oh, the cobbler,
and then
yeah.
you made the nectarine tart.
Mm-hmm.
And you made the...
The cheesecake.
The burnt cheesecake. It yeah. was the... Not burnt,
the
but it was...
Cheesecake.
Yeah, it was... Oh, I do love Bon Appetit.
I know. Our Mondays are much better with dessert Mondays.
Yeah, that's something new that we've been doing as well in the DM office. That is unrelated to any strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a happiness strategy.
I mean, it's like an office happiness strategy. Yeah.
Yeah. So how have you found the reception of our content becoming, because we were probably pretty scared to go a little more broad, to go a little more generalized. We're very like, has to be tactical. It has to be step by step.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's what we've always done. We've always had really clear cut strategies and tactics and steps that these readers could take, right? Mm-hmm. Very broken down, very in depth. But I think with our readers, especially since we have so many people who are new to our brand or who maybe don't know as much about marketing, like we're here to serve all levels of marketers, right?
Right.
But if we're only catering to one level of marketer on our blog, I think we're missing a huge gap.
We're not building them.
Exactly.
We're not getting to them to that point.
Exactly.
It has to be a
now
an entrance point.
Yeah. So now, I mean, now we're catering to the very beginner who literally doesn't know what digital marketing is. And then we're catering to the people who don't know, oh, well, I know about digital marketing. What about this specific strategy? Or what about this specific tool? Or I know I need to start on my social media strategy, but I don't know how to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So here are some tools for you.
Yeah.
I think it fits more of our audience.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we're missing out on giving every person more content. But I think if we're hitting more of our audience, we're better serving the people that we're trying to sell to and trying to teach. I mean, that's ultimately our goal as the company.
All right. And there you have it. So I hope you got some great takeaways from that. And we'll be back next week as usual. So have a great holiday and stay safe. And if you're enjoying the show, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up. Because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and three unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.